It's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's blast deep into the night. And a two-run homer for Baez.
We're getting a 13-yard gain here on fourth down. And right now, not looking good. Trubisky's going to run it. And he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
Bentley play action. So Jake Bentley chased.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
Hit the ring. Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClaren hits by Crane. One, two. He did it. He did it. Steamboat's got him up. McClaren has done it. McClaren has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. With you until 8 o'clock, and then we'll have college basketball, Ohio State against Michigan, right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Back, oh, what? What, you surprised? I told you. Told you the 6 o'clock. If you follow me on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood, or my Facebook wall, facebook.com, I told you it's going to be a short flight tonight because we've got college basketball. Don't worry, we got full shows on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, starting at 7 o'clock. So I started at 6, but yeah, we're going to be together. But if you missed the first hour and you're just tuning in at 7 o'clock, boom, I got you with the Under the Hood podcast. Just download the Under the Hood podcast, subscribe to it, whether it's on SoundCloud or iTunes or Google Play or TuneIn, wherever you download your podcast, look for my name, Jonathan Hood. Look for UTH Pod, look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, however you look it up. You'll be able to find it, and that way you can download it into your device. You'll never miss an episode if you just download Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. All right, here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Coming up, we'll have Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. It's around 7:15. Can't forget about you. Forget about Tales from the Hood. And then we got Brian Hamilton from TheAthletic.com coming up at 7:35. His thoughts on college basketball. Ohio State will take on Michigan. We'll get his thoughts on the Big Ten. But we'll talk about Illinois with Brian as well. He was with the Chicago Tribune, I want to say about, I think 6 or 7 years Brian was with the Tribune. But now he's with TheAthletic.com. So we'll talk some college basketball with him right here on ESPN 1000. Stay safe wherever you are. So glad that you are with us here on this Tuesday night. I saw this on ESPN.com regarding, make sure I got the right article. Players who leveled up, Ciara, level up. Players who leveled up for all 32 NFL teams in 2018, right? So now that the 2018 season is complete for all but two teams, the NFL Nation reporters on ESPN.com have identified a single player on the teams that they cover who raised his level of play from 2017 to 2018. That player could be someone who didn't play much and became a solid starter, or a good player who broke through to become great. So they go through all the teams, right? They go through all the teams. And, of course, my focus always is, I know the AFC East usually comes first in these lists, so I scroll past the Bills and the Dolphins and the Patriots. I went down, I scrolled to, of course, the NFC North. I see the Minnesota Vikings have McKenzie Alexander, a cornerback. Alexander admittedly got out of his own way this season and stopped fighting the idea of playing in the slot after so many years of collegiate success as a physical outside cornerback from Courtney Cronin. So Courtney identifies McKenzie Alexander. For Green Bay, linebacker Kyler Fackrell. So Fackrell, 5 combined sacks in the first two NFL seasons, left many ready to put the third-round pick into the bust category, but he broke out with a 10.5 sacks in 2018. So, Fackrell for the Packers. And then for the Lions, it's Okwara, the defensive end, a waiver wire pickup by the Lions just before the start of the regular season. And for the Bears, who could be the breakout guy for the Bears? Sure, there's a lot of candidates when it comes to this, right? I mean, it could be players on the defensive side. It could be guys on the offensive side of the football that really is able to break out. But JD, Jeff Dickerson, chose Kyle Fuller, the 14th overall pick in the 2014 NFL draft. Fuller signed a big deal, $18 million guaranteed last offseason to remain with the Bears. But his true breakout year occurred in 2018. Fuller led the Bears with 7 interceptions and made the Pro Bowl as Chicago reached the playoffs for the first time since 2010. So, Kyle Fuller is the guy. And you know what? I think that's a good choice. I think it's a good choice for Kyle Fuller because there are years, as you well know, some lean times where you wonder, is Kyle Fuller ever going to be a guy that can break out for the Bears? And I think, again, he had a very solid year for the Bears. So I think that's a good choice by JD as I scroll down and figure out the players who leveled up in 2018. So I think it's a good choice.
You think Eddie Jackson was running right behind him on his tail in that vote? You think definitely JD went back and forth?
Definitely a second.
Yeah.
I could text JD and ask him. But I think that if nothing else, that he was a close second on that list. I like Eddie Jackson. Enjoy my time working with him on that the one show we did after a Monday game. So that was
best Monday night in football. Football Monday night.
It's a football night in Chicago. I think that's what you're looking for there. Thank you. Thank you, though. thank you, Davis. Football night in Chicago. We had a fun time doing that show together. I liked Eddie. Even though he's an Alabama Crimson Tide player, I still am a big fan.
I'm just trying to rebrand it, that's all.
it could use it. So the Super Bowl is this Sunday, as you well know. And we've got all week to break down who's going to win, who's not going to win, all that. We've got plenty of time for that. I wanted to focus with you in our breakdown this week of the Super Bowl on Tom Brady. But only in this regard. If you heard me on the weekend working Dickerson and Hood, you might have heard me say this on Sunday show. We work weekends, Saturdays from 3 to 7 on Saturdays and 3 to 7 on Sundays here on ESPN 1000, also heard across the country on ESPNradio.com. So we were on Sunday. So you might have heard me say this. So if it's a repeat, I apologize. But if it's new, this will be new to you. I think that when it comes to Tom Brady, as great as he is, I think that we have to understand what he's trying to do. Sure, we on the surface, it's about trying to win the Super Bowl, right? Because he's trying to add another ring to his repertoire, another championship. But what he's trying to do is he's doing something that he enjoys doing. He enjoys playing football. I wasn't sure if Tom just enjoyed it because it became easy to him or did he really love football, but I think it's very clear over the years of watching him that he really loves the game. He really loves the game of football because he's got the best coach in the history of the game on the sideline. He's got an ownership that has a commitment to winning, and they're always in the mix in the AFC because of him. How many come-from-behind victories have we seen from Tom Brady over the years in which you watch him and you say, wow, yet another come-from-behind victory, another opportunity to win. He did it against Kansas City. He continues to do it. And the reason why he does it is because he enjoys the game. I just don't understand the hot takers. And there is a distinct difference between talk show hosts or fans like you and I or hot takers. There's a difference. When we hear the hot takers talk about Tom Brady, every year, doesn't matter what network you turn on, there's going to be somebody, some lout, that's going to tell you that Tom Brady's done, Tom Brady's finished, it's over, the Patriots are done. You know why you hear this? You know why you hear someone from a vociferous standpoint try to just take all the air out of the room and tell you that a player is done or that team is done? You know why that happens? It's because they want to be ahead of the story. They want to be able to be the one to say, I told you Tom Brady was done. I'm the one who proclaimed for his career to be over. Only Tom Brady knows when his career is over. We're seeing something here at age 41 that when you and I were coming up, if there was someone that was over 40 years of age that looked like Vinny Testaverde, that was colorblind and didn't know his own uniform from the opposition and would throw the ball to the other side and knowing that he was done. There was a time where we watched quarterbacks and saw like three on a roster, active on a roster. And usually that third quarterback was kind of like a player coach. Like, he wouldn't really play, but if you had to have emergency break glass, you'd bring that guy in. Tom Brady has completely flipped the script in that, and so has Drew Brees, and those that are at 40 years of age or north of 40, and they're still playing the game. Tom really enjoys it because it is, here's the thing. It's never just easy for the Patriots. It's just never that easy. This is not five all-stars on the floor like the Golden State Warriors, the way they're able to waltz through and win championships. It's not like that. What it is Tom Brady loving the game, saying, okay, as long as I have young players around me, young offensive line, young people that I can continue to throw to, receivers, tight ends, a running back. As long as I have younger guys, 20 years younger than me, that can get it done. As long as I'm upright, I can still play the game. So it's clear that Tom Brady loves the game. I just also want to point this out too. The feeling that we can proclaim someone done. The only way that I would come on here and tell you that the Patriots are done is if we actually had, proof that it's happening. Proof. Where you see back-to-back-to-back years where you see the decline of Tom Brady. You see the decline of Bill Belichick and not being able to get it done. That's the whole thing. So I don't know why at your job, on your social media, on the phone lines with me, that you tell me that, oh, well, for sure, this is going to be the year. For sure, it's over. I think that I think a lot of it, especially from a fan standpoint, is, well, he doesn't play for my team, so screw him. And I don't look at it like that. I look at it as the intriguing part for me, whether it's the Warriors in their run or the Patriots in their run, the most intriguing part for me as a sports fan is the chase. People don't want to be around for the chase. People don't want to be around for the storyline of when it does happen. Wow, I saw it happen. And then you saw the turning of the tide. People don't want to be around to root for the underdog and say, maybe the Rams, not just this year, but maybe they're going to be on a run. It's kind of like Alabama football, where Clemson got them twice and won a couple of national championships. People just want to hate Alabama. You can hate Alabama, that's fine. But to be tired of greatness, I don't get that. I'm sure Muhammad Ali went through that. I'm sure that other dynasties or teams or individuals that continue to win, I'm sure they went through the same thing. But I always think that the chase, who's on the other side of that? Who's getting closest to that champion? And in this case, it's the Rams. I don't know if they're going to have sustained success. I don't know if it's going to be somebody different. But until then, I will exalt and celebrate and kind of watch in awe, like, wow, how can my team be that good? How can the Bears be even close to what the Patriots are? How do they have that institutional control to be able to move the egos aside enough to be able to be at least in the conversation at the game for the Super Bowl? I think that's the thing that I look at. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. There's so much energy on hate, sports hate, versus looking at the teams as they are, as championship clubs, and say, wow, bravo, another championship. That's pretty good. Tom Brady's the GOAT. Well, and then the other side of it is, okay, so who's going to be able to take the mantle? That's always interesting to me. Not hating Brady, but just wondering, like, who's going to take the brass ring away from him? Who's going to take the brass ring away from the Golden State Warriors? That's the thing that's interesting to me more so than hating on the championship team. So speaking of the Super Bowl, so Coach McVay of the Rams gave his thoughts to the press about what impresses him most about the Patriots.
And I think the thing that's so impressive about the Patriots, and Tom obviously being a key part of that, is just their ability to consistently find a way to be their best at the most important moments. You look at what they were able to do in terms of how they finished the season, then the way that they played in these two playoff games, they're the real deal. And he certainly is one of the best competitors of all time, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, if not the greatest. And they've got great players around them. They've got one of the greatest coaches of all time. And the Patriots are the real deal.
So thoughts there from McVay. Now, here's something that we haven't had all year. We have a soundbite from Bill Belichick at the Super Bowl, and it's 37 seconds long. Usually they're 10, 8, 3. He talks about how the Rams do everything well.
They're a well-balanced team. They have great players, great defensive players, led by Donald, and you know, obviously they're well-coached. Goff, Gurley, good offensive line, good skill players, Cooks. Hecker is really a weapon. One of the most dangerous players in a kicking game in the entire football, in the National Football League. Obviously a kicker, Sarah Line kicked a 57-yard field goal to beat the Saints. So they have great players. They're well coached. They're tough. They win a lot of close games because they know how to play good situational football. I mean, they're good at everything.
So thoughts there from Bill Belichick. So you got a chance to hear from the coaches there. Sean McVay, young coach in the NFL, saw the Bears beat the Rams earlier this year, this past regular season, and it's a good team, strong offensively. Now we're wondering about whether or not the GOAT, two GOATs actually, Belichick and Brady, can get it done one more time against a prolific offense in Goff. And keep in mind, Jared Goff has been, this is rare air for him, taking on, first of all, being in the Super Bowl and taking on an all-time great quarterback and coach. Should be interesting. Time for Tales from the Hood.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Single game tickets are available for Penn State, Rutgers, Minnesota, and Ohio State. Buy now at nusports.com, nusports.com. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Davis, I was really saddened by the passing of James Ingram. Did you...
I was sad as well, yeah.
Yeah, so let's get a little, give people a little bit of taste of James Ingram.
Can we figure out what we keep doing wrong? Father, good times never last for long. Where are we going wrong? Just once, can we find a way?
Yes, James Ingram. If you hear a little Michael McDonald in that, it's because he's worked with Michael McDonald, with Ray Charles, with Quincy Jones, with Anita Baker. Died of brain cancer at 66. He had so many hit records and was part of so many... he worked with so many Grammy Awards, too. Working with Michael McDonald in 85. Best Male R&B Vocal Performance in 1982. He's been around a long time, but the great... James Ingram passing away.
Absolutely one of the silkiest R&B voices, just voices ever, yeah, from male. So, yeah.
So it's tough, definitely a tough loss there in the musical world. See, Davis, I think if you have a story, I have several other ones. You tell me, is there something else that stood out today for Tales?
I want to talk about this story with Anthony Davis being fined $50,000. And the statement released by the NBA says, according to the CBA, it prohibits players and agents from demanding a trade. I thought we just had two players do that over the previous two summers. Did Kyrie or Kawhi get fined?
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I'm confused.
Yes, I saw the same thing. And I don't know why that's different from the other two. Especially Jimmy Butler, by the way.
Add in Jimmy Butler. That's three.
Yes. Don't forget Jimmy Butler, who made a big stink of trying to leave Minnesota, and that happened, but yet, somehow, some way, AD is fined. So I don't get that. I know our time is tight because we got to get to Brian Hamilton, so that is Tales from the Hood sponsored by NUSports.com, Northwestern Basketball, Chicago's Big Ten team. All right, we got to take a break because we got to get to Brian Hamilton. We'll get his thoughts on some college basketball conversation, Ohio State against Michigan. And by the way, for those of you who are the wrestling fans or, that are listening to the show, you know, we heard from Mike Johnson from PWInsider.com. If you are not one but know of one, tell them to go to the Under the Hood podcast. The interview's up in its entirety. Our conversation about where Dean Ambrose is going for the future, some thoughts about Ronda Rousey. Is she going to be in the main event in WrestleMania against Becky Lynch? A lot of other WWE stuff from this past weekend for Royal Rumble weekend in Phoenix. It's there on the Under the Hood podcast. Check it out. It's right there. Look for my name, Jonathan Hood, Under the Hood, and that way you can download it right into your device. All right, we're going to hear from Brian Hamilton from The Athletic. That's coming up next.
Jonathan Hood, weeknights on ESPN 1000.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So glad you're with us. Short show tonight because of the top of the hour. We'll have Ohio State against Michigan. Interesting college basketball for you again at the top of the hour right here on ESPN 1000. Brian Hamilton covers college sports, college basketball for TheAthletic.com. Got a great article about Marquette we're going to talk about here and some other college basketball stories. And Brian joins me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hello, Brian.
How are you?
Doing good. Well, thanks. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Great. I'm happy to be here.
I want to get your thoughts about Sam and Joey Hauser from Marquette, because that was your latest column. What did you learn about the inner workings of Marquette, and especially those two?
Well, I think they're sort of secretly, or maybe not so secretly, really the keys to Marquette taking that next step as a program. I think that's what everyone's been waiting for. You know, Steve Wojciechowski has established an ability to win, an ability to recruit some high-level players, an ability to sort of stay consistent. But I don't know that they'd really reached that next level of championship contention, of making noise in the Big East tournament, the NCAA tournament. And, you know, we all know what Marcus Howard can do. I mean, the guy averages about 25 a game, can blow up for like 40 and a half. I mean, we've seen what he can do, but most teams are not going to be great, even with a guy like Marcus Howard, if he doesn't have any help. And I think that's where Sam and Joey Hauser come in. These are high-level guys that are really able to diversify that offense. I mean, they're both big, 6'7", 6'9". They can handle it. They can shoot from the outside. They can play in the post. They sort of have that innate sixth sense for basketball that you would expect brothers who've played together their entire life to have. And I think when you've got that sort of diversity of options, that makes you a dangerous team. Marcus Howard can have a bad game. Heck, Marcus Howard can basically not play on the road at Georgetown, and Marquette can still win that game behind Sam Hauser. I mean, they're able to pick up the slack when Howard isn't able to do all the sort of basketball wizardry stuff that he does. And that's what takes you from a decent team, a good team on the fringe, to a team that's contending for a league title and maybe can make noise in March.
Brian, I'm looking at R.J. Barrett and also Zion Williamson, and those two are getting a lot of attention, rightfully so, from the Duke program. What stands out most about what they bring to Duke? Is there one better than the other in your view?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a small arcane thing for me because I've watched them a ton so far, but you know, aside from just being great individual talents and the ability to get their own shot when they want, is their ability to score in traffic. I am constantly sort of shocked, even though at this point I shouldn't be, with how well R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson finish through contact in the lane, at the rim, make tough baskets off of drives. I mean, that is... you don't see a lot of college players do that. And maybe it's not surprising with Zion just because of how big he is and how much of a huge his frame is. Guys kind of bounce off of him. But having not seen a ton of R.J. Barrett, before this year. I mean, he's right there. You see R.J. Barrett going to traffic, and that ball goes up towards the rim. And it is a good shot. It's not a prayer. It's not a hope. I mean, he's finishing through traffic at the rim. And I think that very small thing is kind of flipping on its head to me the whole idea of, can a team based around one-and-done players win a national championship? Number one, Duke's playing defense. They're playing very high-level defense with their athleticism and their switchability. Makes it impossible for a lot of teams to run offense. Even I think Mike Brady said it was basically impossible to make a pass last night when they played Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. But really, it's that ability to sort of go one-on-one and finish at the rim and get key buckets at key times that I think may separate them from maybe the past one-and-done teams that didn't fare as well.
Brian Hamilton from TheAthletic.com with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. As we have our conversation, go to TheAthletic.com. Click on college basketball, and that's where you can find Brian Hamilton's columns. Brian, you've been in the city long enough to know about how fans feel about the Illinois program. You know, you get those that will look at Illinois and say, how come there's not more public league talent? How come more kids aren't staying in the state to be able to play for Illinois? But how likely is it for Brad Underwood to make Illinois a destination?
It's going to be tough because you're fighting against not just, you know, Northwestern or regional teams like a Wisconsin or even other Big Ten teams. I mean, if there are really good players in Illinois, difference-making, super high-level players, you're talking about competing against Kentucky and Kansas and Duke and all those high-level programs. And I'm not saying you can't win those battles, but it's really hard to win a majority of those battles or even kind of to get your share when you're going against those programs. That's just reality. I mean, it's sort of a chicken and the egg thing. I mean, they're going to have to win and prove themselves to be a destination for five stars, for guys like that. In order to win, though, you have to get the high-level players. I think basically critical couple of years. I mean, Brad Underwood's in year two right now. I wonder if there's sort of the ability to keep Ayo Dosunmu around for next year, return Trent Frazier, return Benjavili. I mean, that would be a nice core for them moving forward, and then you've just got to make strides. You just can't. You know, they had a real tough schedule this year. They probably overscheduled for the team they had. That's just the way it was. I think Brad Underwood inherited some of that. But, yeah, I mean, you need to start winning to make it a destination. So you're going to kind of have to grind it out with guys that are below the five stars. I know Io is a highly, highly recruited guy. But for the most part, you're going to have to win without the top 10, top 15 guys first, and then hope that you can start attract them because you've created a winning culture there without them.
Brian, what are your thoughts on the state of the Big Ten? Speaking of Illinois, we just saw Illinois go into Madison Square Garden and beat Maryland. Mm-hmm. That came out of nowhere. I didn't expect that. I think that the bottom of the Big Ten, I'm not saying they're on the same level as the top of it, but there's some tough outs there. There's some tough opponents. Do you see the Big Ten being fluid as we look at the season so far?
I think there's a clear tiering. You know, I certainly think Michigan and Michigan State have separated themselves at the top of the league. I think the next tier down, yeah, you can see a lot of teams beat up on one another. You know, I think maybe the Big 12 has the smallest separation between top and bottom of any league. I think you can make an argument that like ACC teams, the bottom of the ACC teams are kind of like the bottom of the Big 10 teams too. I don't think the Big 10 has sort of a claim on the best bottom of any league. But yeah, I think it's Michigan and Michigan State at the top. Clearly everyone else is going to be vulnerable. Everyone else is going to be able to, you know, play at a really high level and beat just about anybody else. And everyone else is going to be able to kind of stumble when you wouldn't expect them to. So that's why when I see like 10 bids for the Big Ten and all the bracketology predictions and stuff like that, like I get that there might be 10 worthy teams right now, but I think the grind is just going to wind up dragging down at least one or two teams' resumes. It'd still be great improvement, obviously, for the Big Ten. Get 8 bids after getting 4 last year, but 10 might be a little much just because I think some teams get banged along the way.
Brian, I can't help but to look at some of the mock drafts for the NBA. And the reason why is because, well, I'm in Chicago, and there's no NBA to look at with the Bulls. So you got to figure out, like, where the Bulls going to be in the draft. So is it too early to look at Ja Morant as a potential prospect? Because a lot of these mock drafts I'm seeing, like, he's in the top three, and I'm thinking, well, isn't that too early? It's no way he's over Zion Williamson or R.J. Barrett, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I had the number one pick that I would really go with Ja Morant over Zion Williamson at this point, unless there was some sort of real problem with position redundancy, although the way the game is played right now, I don't really see how that would happen. That said, I think a guy who averages 24 points a game and 10 assists a game in college and can jump out of the gym and literally jump over guys to dunk over them in games is going to be a pretty highly coveted prospect. I think Ja Morant's probably going to be almost surely going to be your first point guard off the board. I think you could see him go right after Zion and RJ Barrett, maybe depending on need, depending on who you have. Do you take him over an RJ Barrett? I don't know. I mean, it's a point guard driven league. A guy like him who can score and create and push the pace and do a ton of things for you is going to be a highly, highly coveted guy. So if you're in the market for a point guard, you don't really have to despair if your team doesn't get the number one or number two pick, because with Ja Morant, you might be getting a guy who certainly is as impactful in his own way as those other guys.
Brian, lastly, I'm wondering, is it too early for me to look at the college basketball season this way, or am I right on? Because when I'm looking at the top teams in the top 25, and I see Tennessee, and Tennessee's had some really good games, and they're number one team in the country. But when I stay up late and I'm watching Nevada, I'm thinking it seems to be some parity throughout this college basketball, especially from one through, I'd say, 10 or 15. Do you solidify Tennessee as number one, or am I right that there's some parity there that we could be looking for when we get closer to the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you really have that runaway unbeatable team. I mean, I think we all thought that might be Duke after that that opening game. I certainly was pretty overwhelmed by what I saw at the Champions Classic, but, you know, obviously everyone's proven to be beatable. There are teams that are less beatable than others. I mean, I saw Virginia play in person last weekend, and I was pretty well blown away by how well they are not only playing defense, but spacing it now, playing a really efficient brand of offense, but more efficient and with more ways to score than I think Tony Bennett's enjoyed in a long time, maybe ever, at Virginia. You know, right now, to be number one, yeah, I probably, if I was voting in a poll, I'd probably have Tennessee up there, yeah, but when you look at it, for me, it's always about, okay, what's the group of teams that can win a national championship? And I still think you could legitimately see 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams make a claim to being right now the sort of team that could make a run at a national championship. And then you're always going to have a couple other teams enter that mix along the way here, too.
Brian, what's the next piece you're working on for The Athletic?
Tune in soon for some information on the Texas Tech Red Raiders. They had a little losing skid there, but they're back on a 2-game winning streak, and they will face Kansas this weekend. It kind of a proving ground game for Chris Bierman. Team makes the Elite Eight last year, lost a lot of guys, but they're still playing basically the best defense in the country right now. They throttled TCU on Monday night, kind of played what Chris Beard told me what he thought was the most cleanest, most complete game they've played all season. So we're going to kind of write about how he's installed that defensive philosophy at Texas Tech and carried it over throughout the years and sort of bring them this moment against Kansas and Lawrence on Saturday.
So there's going to be a little Jared Culver love there. How good could he be for Texas Tech, right?
A little bit. I mean, he's been a little bit up and down. I mean, he played a lot better last night, and he, you know, this is a guy a lot of people look at as a lottery pick. I think people maybe in that 3-game losing skid, he wasn't quite playing up to the level of lottery pick, but that's a highly, highly talented guy on both ends of the floor.
Brian, as always, I appreciate your time. Hope you get a chance to come on with us again.
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
It is Brian Hamilton from TheAthletic.com. Again, go to TheAthletic.com. Click College Basketball. You can find Brian Hamilton's column right there on the website. Glad that you're with us here as we spend time with you here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
As I combine all the juice from the mind, heal up, wheel up, bring it back, come rewind.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
full show tomorrow from 7 to 10 on a Wednesday right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Got some stuff for you. I'll be talking to Michael O'Brien about what's going on in high school basketball from the IHSA. We'll get a chance to talk to him at 9:30 tomorrow night. We'll get his thoughts on some of the storylines around high school basketball. That'll be part of the mix tomorrow, along with the Super Bowl and along with some NBA and a lot more right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. By the way, just a little footnote to what we talked about in our 6 o'clock hour regarding Anthony Davis. And again, I don't know why people are in an uproar or why there's a surprise to the story of Anthony Davis not coming to, you know, not even in the mix to go to the Bulls. Just remember where the bread is buttered in the NBA, and that's around LeBron James. Whether LeBron James won another championship or not, that Clutch Sports, that Rich Paul, look it up for yourself. That group controls a lot in the NBA. And LeBron James, to me, is no different than Tom Brady in that LeBron James wants to win more championships, yes, but he knows that tomorrow's not promised. You already see he went down with an injury this year, but he wants to play along with other talented players, younger talented players. And so that group is going to try to get Anthony Davis, I'm sure, to come. As soon as Anthony Davis changed agents to Clutch Sports, I was like, there it is. Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN.com wrote this. Says the New Orleans Pelicans plan to listen to offers on Anthony Davis, but won't make a deal before next Thursday's NBA trade deadline unless they're offered something overwhelming as far as a package for the franchise star. Lakers president Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, the general manager, plan to make an aggressive push to acquire Davis before the February 7th deadline, armed with confidence that Davis wants to play for the Lakers and would sign an extension. It makes sense to me that he would probably go to L.A. to play with LeBron. But if I'm the Pelicans, I didn't talk about this side of it until now. I'm just holding back. Like, I don't have to trade you at all because I think I'd be worried about butts and seats at the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans. I still think I'd be concerned about whether or not we can contend when you're healthy. So, yeah, I would not worry about it if I'm them. Yes, you want to be able to have a package of some sort, but I don't know if the Lakers or any other team can give them some overwhelming package. Here's half my team for Anthony Davis. Are you willing to do it? Does it work money-wise? I would have no rush because the Pelicans and Alvin Gentry and that organization knows that that's the beginning of the end right there. They might as well get the boards and the hammers and the nails and just start boarding up the organization. Because it can't last there. After Katrina and after some of the Fortune 500 companies were not around there anymore, the lack of actual butts and seats in that place, they'll never be able to fill that up on a regular basis. It's good that they're doing what they're doing now with the Pelicans, with the kind of crowds they have there. But Davis was the draw, and if Anthony Davis isn't there, then that's the end. No one's going to see second and third rate talent on a regular basis with the Pelicans. It was a stretch anyway for the NBA to go to that market again, and definitely will be a stretch if Anthony Davis isn't there. But this is what happens when you look at small market teams like the Pelicans that don't have that second, third superstar. They only have the one. And in the case here, in a major market like Chicago, and New York is going through this as well with the Knicks, they're bereft of quality stars. There is no star power in either one of those markets. It took LeBron to leave Cleveland to go to L.A. just to help the Lakers have that star power. And with the Knicks and the Chicago Bulls, there is no star power. I'll give Porzingis credit. I'll raise my eyebrow and give Porzingis a little credit. But I think that's the whole key. That's the whole thing with that. So it's interesting to see where Davis is going to go. But the bottom line to everything is, remember the word culture. That's the name of the show tonight, culture, culture club. The lack of culture with this Bulls team is the reason why that you and I are not having this conversation about Anthony Davis being part of the Bulls. Because you see all the assets the Bulls have. They have all these guys. Like, I don't expect Chris Dunn to be with the Bulls by the time we get to the trade deadline. I don't expect him to be here. But then again, I don't expect the Bulls to be able to pull off a decent enough deal for them to be able to have something back, whether it's a quality draft pick or money or whatever they're looking for. There's some guys that's going to be gone. And so that doesn't mean the team's going to get better. It's just things that they're going to do before the deadline to seem active. So that's how I see it. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. See if there's more developments with Anthony Davis. All right. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Our thanks to you for listening. Our thanks to Mike Johnson. Our thanks to Brian Hamilton for being with the show, produced by Sean Davis on the other side of the glass. All right. Full show tomorrow, 7 to 10 right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. And don't forget the Under the Hood podcast. Wherever you download your podcast, download Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. That way you never miss an episode of our show. All right. Full show tomorrow, 7 to 10 right here on UTH.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so hood.
On ESPN 1000.